Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and the nature of consciousness. We have a stellar roster of special guests who are featured on Toward the Light every week, and we also invite people to call in to make comments and ask questions during the show. For more information about our organization and our radio program, Toward the Light, please do visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Another really quick announcement that I'd like to make is that we do now have the Toward the Light directory, which people can sign up and become listed in the directory, whether you're experiencers, researchers, caregivers, loved ones, enlightened media, and anyone who is interested in the near-death and similar spiritual experiences and phenomena. So please do go to towardthelight.org and click on TTL directory for more information and do sign up. We're going to have a lot of wonderful people featured in there very soon. It is growing all the time. Well, this week I'm very pleased to have back Dr. Claude Swanson, who, thanks to Claude, is the reason why I've got this radio show, Toward the Light, because I was on his show originally. He is the author of an amazingly brilliant book entitled Synchronized Universe, an absolute must-read, where we've got science and metaphysics merging and having a lovely harmonious marriage going on. So welcome to Toward the Light, Claude. How are you?
Hi, Juliet. I'm delighted to be here. It's wonderful to hear your melodious voice. And
Well, thank you, lad. Thank you.
It's a wonderful show. You have a wonderful website and so much activity going on. It's really great to visit with you.
Well, we should do a little shameless mutual support and promotion here, because I do have Synchronized Universe chapter on out-of-body experiences on towardthelight.org under near-death studies. So if our listeners would like to get just an idea of the wonderful book that you've written, go to towardthelight.org and check out that SU chapter on OBEs. And now, your website is synchronizeduniverse.com. Do you have examples from chapters on that website as well?
I do. I have the introduction, which is about 19 or 20 pages. I think that's on the website, and a few pages from chapter 1, which is on remote viewing, and a few pages from chapter 2, which is ESP, are on the website. So you can get a pretty good idea from that. The introduction explains how I got into this business in the first place, how I was, you know, sort of began waking up.
Well, let's talk about that a bit. That would be really great to start, actually, because, you know, considering your background, it's quite stunning, really, that you have this amazing turnaround. And
yeah, well, it would have been so much easier if I just died two or three times. I might have been able to figure it out a little bit faster, you know.
Oh, you can at least have an out-of-body experience. You don't really have to die.
even that would help. Even that would help. I did it the hard way. I did it sort of the left brain path. And I guess the good part of that is that other people who are more left brain, maybe they're engineers or scientists or much more cognitive in the way they approach life, might be able to relate better to the spiritual journey. If they have not had direct experiences, they might be able to understand it better from reading my book. It sort of that documents how I got there. I was always curious about the universe, and I wanted to understand how things work and how the universe functions at the deepest levels. So I got into physics. I went into MIT and then into grad school at Princeton University. I had a PhD in physics, and I kept trying, hoping to find the answer, hoping to find this really satisfying, holistic theory that would explain how things fit together, because I always had a sense that they do fit together. There's a connection between us and the distant matter of the universe, that there's a connection at a very deep level, I felt, and I was hoping that our science would have it all figured out, and I'd get this wonderful theory. I could just sit in class, and somebody would teach it, and I would be, get all my questions answered. And it didn't happen that way. I ended up feeling like what our current physics felt very superficial to me, and I was unsatisfied by it. And so I kept looking. In the mid-80s, I came across remote viewing, and that was sort of my paradigm shift. That was my beginning, because remote viewing violates our current science on every possible level, and yet it's true, and it does happen. We have this ability to go out of body and go out of space and time and visit other places and other events, and our science can't explain how that can happen. So that was my first clue of how a new science can grow out of our current science.
And in fact, I've done that a lot myself. I've done quite a bit of remote viewing, and that to me is very interesting.
Uh-huh. Did you take courses, or did you just sort of know how to do it automatically?
Oh, actually, it's really something that's more just happened to me, and perhaps, perhaps part of that could be an extension of the fact that, I'm a multiple NDE, and I've just naturally several times just popped out of my body, and I'm talking about apart from being near death or actually dying, and so I would just be able to see things, and sometimes I would just be in a relaxed state and a vision would come to me so clearly, and I'd go, ooh, what is this that I'm seeing? And then I'd just start comparing notes and finding out it was just spot on.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that you were addressing this, and well, even though it was a big, heavy book, your book, and I've got to hold it up to my face, I had a hard time putting it down, as heavy as it is, because this is just so up my road, as it were, reading about this stuff, because this is stuff, perhaps in a way, I've taken for granted.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Julia. Yeah, the for me, the challenge has always been how to get out of my body. And our education system in the West is so cognitive. It's so much memorizing and calculating and adding and subtracting and very logical training, which makes it harder for us to get out of the body and to turn off that analytical part.
Well, you made a good point of pointing out that it's the left brain, and that's not where we get most of our information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
right.
think.
Exactly. So, one of the reasons when I was very excited about remote viewing, in the 90s, several people began offering courses in remote viewing, and the military had a program for 20 years, as you know, that did very secret program to doing remote viewing. In the mid-90s, that became public, and it all fell apart and became public, and the people in the program left it and began teaching courses in it. And some of them are very good and very... it turns out that what they had learned a way to help the rest of us, who are not so psychically naturally gifted or haven't had, that kind of practice, they helped us to get our left brain turned off. And what they did was develop exercises to give the left brain, that analytical part, something to do. So they give it a chart. So if you have an idea, you see a red wheelbarrow, let's say, in your image. Well, your left brain is told you have to make a little chart here, and you said, well, it's an object, it's made of matter, its color is red, it has wheels. You know, so you break it apart into different categories, and so your left brain is kept busy with these tasks. And that allows your intuitive subconscious or your right brain to continue getting deeper and deeper into the image. And as you probably know, in military remote viewing, or the sort of the coordinate remote viewing, as they call it, you know, there is a specific target that you're supposed to be going after.
Yes.
But you don't know what it is. All you're told is eight numbers or some way of some association that tells you nothing about the target. And that forces you to get in touch with it on a psychic level, you know, not a conscious level. But it was a wonderful experience. I took three courses like that at Farsight in Atlanta, and it really showed me that anyone, that we all have this ability. And, of course, you know, the challenge for science is how can you explain this stuff? But, you know.
And yet I think that the more things are coming up, it's making it possible to explain just that, you know. And you've done an exquisite job with this, and you know, in your writings. And one thing I want to say too is that just the fact that the military has used this and has been doing it for quite some time, right there is evidence that it works. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be messing with it.
Well, exactly. And it was a 20-year program. And they got funded every year. And if you go back and read, well, people like Joe McMonagle, who's pretty famous and has written several books on remote viewing, he was one of the people in that program. He was, in fact, one of the early and very gifted remote viewers. He wrote a book called Mind Trek, I guess, and a couple other ones on remote viewing. And when you read his accounts of things they saw and things he can do, you realize this stuff is real. And people who are very gifted at it, people like you who can go out of body easily and can move around in these spaces very comfortably, you know, you can get some very accurate information, and that tells us that these other dimensions are real, you know, that it's not just the material universe that we're so used to in our Western culture. That's just a tiny piece of the universe. And to me, that one of the big lessons that we're learning now is that the universe is much bigger than this, and that it's the higher dimensions, it's the places we go when we are dead, when our body is dead and our spirit continues to live. I mean, that's where the real action is in many ways. You know, that like Daniel Brinkley says, I mean, we're these powerful spiritual beings, and we're just trying to have this physical experience here on Earth, but that's just a tiny fraction of who we really are.
Well, the beauty of all of this, too, is in the ears, we've been able to prove the fact that the physical body and the physical experience is the minutest part of our being and experience. And in fact, it's really nothing more than donning a suit or a piece of clothing whilst we have to traverse through this very dense, lower vibrational frequency plane. And that's why I'm really excited to speak with you about the other dimensions, because indeed they do exist. Now, I, for one, and a number of us, do regard the physical plane as nothing but a hologram. And in fact, whilst I was on the other side, that was repeatedly driven home to me, as it were, and I was being reminded that, remember, that physical plane is only an illusion, it's a hologram. And whilst on the other side, I could actually see it as a hologram, and I was just seeing the waves and particles. It didn't look solid at all. In fact, it looked very translucent, I would say. And also, the colors and the light were much weaker compared to what I was experiencing on the other side. And, of course, when I say the other side, we're, again, talking about multiple dimensions. So let's get into that a little bit too, Claude, because perhaps as a physicist you can help bring this into, I don't know, a more tangible perspective or understanding or what have you, because I can say, yes, I've been there, but it's not always as easy to explain it.
Yeah, I'm working on understanding it myself. and, you know, it's, I love that perspective you just described. I think that's really a great way to look at it for the Western materialist minded, which is most of our culture here in the West.
Yes.
You know, those higher dimensions are such an abstraction, and when you've been there, they're so vivid and so real. So it's really a different perspective for a scientist trying to imagine or deal with the higher dimensions. It's kind of a struggle, you know. But I think that's the important struggle right now. It's really important for us to do this because it broadens our thinking about what is really out there and what the relative importance of the material world versus the higher dimensions really is. In my first book, The Synchronized Universe, in the last chapter, I talk about the multiple dimensions, and I have a sort of a simple physics theory that I talk about there that shows how, in fact, it's really where the name Synchronized Universe comes from, that the particles that we call matter are really particles that are synchronized in motion with each other.
Yes.
They're synchronized in just the right way, so they happen to see each other. They happen to be moving in the correct direction, so they interact and they have forces and they feel each other. And so that means when you push your hand down on a table, you feel a force from the table because your particles and the particles in the table are synchronized with each other. So for us, we say that's real because we feel a force. But it's really just that is the part that's synchronized, and there are many other universes, many other systems of particles that are synchronized in a little bit different way. And our hand will not feel a force from them because they're vibrating at the wrong place at the wrong time, so there's no force. So one way of understanding how when people walk through walls or when people can disappear and seemingly disappear, such as yogis do when they teleport or bilocate, that it's really synchronization. That if you change your synchronization, all of a sudden you will seem to be invisible.
And when you're talking about that, are you not referring to when they do that, teleportation or what have you, they're actually vibrating at a higher frequency. Is that correct? So that they are able to move in ways that would otherwise not be possible on this lower vibrational frequency realm known as the third dimension.
What it seems to me is that there's a couple different ways. We talk about parallel universes, you know, in a very...
Oh, yes.
Very blasé kind of way, but it seems to me that there are different kinds of parallel, that there could be other physical systems that are pretty much just like ours, but they could be located right here, and yet we don't see them unless we can shift frequency or shift vibrational rate by a small amount. So there can be other parallel universes that when you're in them, they would look material, they would look physical. So that they're kind of like equivalent to our physical universe, but they're just shifted. So that's one kind of parallel universe, and I think there's plenty of evidence that I've seen that these things are real, these other parallel systems are real, and in fact it might be that one of the keys to how we can manifest, how we can change the future, is because we do shift between one of these and another one that's similar to it. So that's one kind of parallel system where you're at the same level of physicality, but you're just shifting from one reality to another. And then there's another type of parallel where you're going to a higher level of vibration, a more complex kind of vibration. And there I think of the domains that in the near-death experience, when you're in the astral levels or in the causal levels, where the reality is really very different. And then that's when you were looking down at the physical domain as a hologram, because you were at a higher level. And I'm really trying to understand how that vibration is different from the vibration that kind of holds us in the physical. To me, our science needs to be able to understand this stuff. And so I'm trying to take a look at that to understand how it is that we can go to these higher levels. Because in communication with the other side, electronic voice phenomena and things like that,
yes,
they're really managing to make contact and to get voice from the other side. But a lot of times it seems as though it's the spirits on the other side who have to do most of the work. You know? We put out a tape recorder or something and we hope something shows up, but they have to create the etheric or the astral machinery, you know, to make the connection. And I know there are people who were scientists in EVP when they were alive, and now they're on the other side trying to build these machines. But it would be awfully nice if we could help them out by understanding a little bit about the physics of the different dimensions, so we could do a little more on our side of building the bridge.
Well, that's a very good point, too. And I know, for example, when I had Dr. Pim van Lommel on the show last fall, actually, lovely, lovely physician who's done a lot of work with NDEs and cardiac arrest, and bless him, he and also Dr. Peter Finnick, these are both physicians who've ended up doing more work focused on the near-death experience. And interestingly, we all simultaneously have come up with the same analogies to describe these different dimensions, giving it the analogy of a radio or television. And that when you're tuned into one radio station, and which is at a certain frequency, all right, and then when you leave your body and you transition to the other side, really what's happened is that you've moved higher up on the radio band to a higher vibrational frequency, and so now you're tuned into and vibrating at a different higher frequency. And so we've pointed out that, you know, these other broadcasts, as it were, are still happening, but you're just not tuned into that particular frequency. And so just because you're not, that doesn't mean that they're gone or that they're not still broadcasting or existing. You're just not tuned into that frequency. So Dr. Pim actually was giving that analogy very beautifully, was using both the radio and the television, you know, and also what we pointed out simultaneously with this is that the brain is not the broadcaster, it is the receiver, like the radio and the television. The images are not coming from your television, the sound is not coming from your radio, it's actually invisible waves that are coming through those devices which decode them. So this is how, you know, we've been explaining this kind of thing, that everything is energy, as you know, and everything is vibrates at a different frequency. So that's sort of the simplest kind of terminology that we've been able to come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's an excellent analogy. And I guess I'm trying to go one step further, because for a scientist, a physicist would probably jump in and he would have some petty quibbles with that. And I think it could captures the truth of the way you are changing a frequency. But for a scientist, they need more, because they think they understand matter, okay? And for them, that's what there is. And I think that the trick is to help them to understand that everything that they know may be part of a synchronized system. In other words, everything they know is kind of derived from one channel.
Wow, which is so inaccurate, isn't it?
Right. And the way our physics works, I think, is that channel kind of becomes invisible because we're all tuned to it. It's very difficult for us to realize that it's there. And that's, I think, part of what I'm trying to do is lay out this model so we can understand that frequency is, you know, underlying everything. And so you have to, if you want to see the other effects, you have to find out how to get away from that frequency. I mean, so that I think one of the hard things for science to understand is, what is etheric matter? What is astral matter? You know, what is mental matter, you know, and because there's no place for it in our current physics. And so they really have to broaden their experience and their thinking about it and look at evidence that right now science doesn't look at to sort of shift this paradigm. I mean, for me, it's been a stretch learning about it myself in the last couple of years because I've been familiar with the layers around the body, the astral, the auric layers, the auras around the body. You know, you have the body, the physical body, and then you have an etheric layer, and you have various astral layers and various causal layers, which are normally associated with life and with the different aspects of life. And we have our emotional feelings, which tend to vibrate more in the astral parts of our aura, and the mental calculations and thoughts are more in this mental part of the aura. And so I've been studying about that, but to realize that what we're actually talking about is an overlap between the physical and these higher dimensions. So there's a whole dimension, there's a whole universe at that frequency, at that type of vibration. And the adept yogis will form or enter a conscious body. They'll shift their state, their meditation state, so that they will tune in to an astral layer or to a mental layer, and then they are completely conscious in that higher dimension, and they can move around in that higher dimension with control, and they can visit beings that are on the other side that have been over there for a long time, perhaps. Maybe go visit somebody working on EVP and look over their shoulder while they're trying to send transmissions to us. And so that type of control and that ability to enter and leave these higher dimensions apparently exists for some people who are very adept. And to me, that's a whole, you know, it's a much bigger view of the universe in terms of really seeing these higher dimensions and higher vibrations as complete spaces and universes of their own. So I've been stretching my mind to try to understand some of this stuff.
Well, that's really wonderful, and that also, you know, lets people know once again that one doesn't have to be one doesn't have to go through the experience of physical death in order to do this, in order to access these other dimensions, in order to experience this awareness, because all of this is tied in so closely, and of course it's exceedingly important to me, as you know we were talking about earlier when we spoke on the phone, the importance of using our telepathy and twisting in that, because, you know, for example, well, many things could happen. You know, we take these electronic devices for granted, and the telephone, the computer, and all of that stuff, but there could be occasions when those things just are not going to be available or working. Like, for example, as I said, when my daughter was in Manhattan during 9/11, mm-hmm. and all the phones went down, and all I had to go on was the telepathy between us. It worked. It was totally accurate, and, you know, I would have been a hysterical mum if it weren't for that. And you so beautifully proven in one of the chapters in your book, Synchronized Universe, about the validity of telepathy. And you were talking about double-blind laboratory tests and all of that stuff, and the fact that telepathy, I think you mentioned this several times, in fact, that it is not weakened by time or space. Distance doesn't weaken it or anything. It is the same strength.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the part that's true of remote viewing. It's true of telepathy. It's true of various types of psychokinesis. Which
that's what I thought. Okay, yes.
To affect things at a distance also, that the time and space don't really have much effect on these connections. When we are connected with another time and another space, that connection does not weaken very much with time or space or distance. So it tells us that it's a very different kind of force than the ones that we're used to in our Western science. It's not electromagnetism. It's not gravity. It's nothing that we already understand. It's something different. And that's one of the things that pulled me onto this path in the first place. You know, the Russians have done research for the past 30 or 40 years on a new kind of force which they call torsion, which is the twisting of space, the ability of space to have a different kind of wave that our physics usually ignores, but they look at it as a twisting, and they find that when you include that, that that might be the explanation to how we have this connection, our mental connection. That might be the secret to how ESP works. But, you know, I think the science is still kind of not all complete yet on some of these subjects, but if you go back and look at the Princeton work, the Princeton Pair Lab work, for 30 years or so, they did hundreds of thousands of experiments with ESP and with psychokinesis. So you're trying to send information, receive information, or affect objects at a distance. And they found in all three cases that the effects are real. They're proven with odds of hundreds of billions, maybe even trillions to one, that this is, you know, that this is not chance. This is a genuine effect. And, you know, that tells us that, you know, it's time for science to wake up.
Well, that is such a good point. Jeez, oh my. I remember reading that and just feeling so excited. I mean, I was just jumping up and down the chair. Whoa, great, you know, because I'm an experiencer and I'm not always that great at coming up with scientific terms or what have you. And another thing that I've been on a campaign to do is to help remove the stigma and the taboo around all of this, just because people have been demonizing all of this just for years, and there's nothing more absurd than that, really. It's such a natural part of our being. And when I've given tutor lessons about mediumship or ESP or telepathy, what have you, I encourage people to relax, because when one is relaxing, one can move more into or flow more into the right brain, because that's the side that is receptive to this kind of impulse, rather than trying to deal with so-called linear or logical thinking that stems from the left brain. And in fact, I think the left brain has a tendency to kind of stifle things, you know.
Yeah, mine does. Well, I don't know how many people are like this, but I have performance anxiety. I'm afraid of getting the wrong answer.
Oh. You know,
and so I get tightened up when I'm trying to do something like this. I'm worried I'll get the wrong answer, so that gets in the way. But one of the things that I mentioned in the Synchronized Universe is that it's not just us that have this ability. Plants have it.
Absolutely.
Dogs have it. Cats have it. Even baby chicks have it. And I give some experiments there in the book where baby chicks were able to control a device called a random event generator that gives kind of random ones and zeros. And baby chicks that are patterned when they're just born to think of whatever they see right away when they come out of the eggs, that's their mother. They're bonded with it. And this very ingenious French scientist fixed a little robot that steered itself based on a random event generator. So it made random ones and zeros. Now, we know from other experiments that people, by their intention, can make there be more ones than zeros, or vice versa. So our minds are able to affect these things. So he had the little baby chicks bond with this little robot, and he turned it loose near their cage, and they made it hover near their cage. If the baby chicks were not there, this robot just randomly bounced around the walls of the room. But when they put it next to his cage and they were bonded to it, it hovered near them. And so they have the ability to affect things. Plants have been shown to pick up the emotions of a person who has some connection with them. In fact, even I had helped my son to do a science experiment, science fair back in high school, and he burned his finger accidentally while he was thinking about playing with matches across the room or something. And when it happened, the plant went berserk. Gave a very strong signal. So,
wow.
So all of these different living things have this ability to have to connect psychically with us.
Well, especially animals, and you know that reminded me of something too. It was December in 2004, and I was in Nashville on Christmas Day, and I just felt so upset that day. I was just crazy beside myself upset, and I didn't know why. And then that night I found out the reason why I'd been upset all day is because of the tsunami hit. And I was thinking about the fact, you know, the animals were all just fine. It was the people who weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, these people have just been tuned in to their sixth sense,
mm-hmm.
and the telepathy.
Yeah.
Hello? They would have been spared.
Yeah, the animals did not stay around.
No, they didn't. They knew to move up, you know, away
yeah.
from the water line and all of that stuff. And how absurd, because, again, it's a natural part of our being, too, to be intuitive and to just have this knowing, okay, something's coming up. Let's move out of the way and get out of danger. Do you explain that?
Well, in my book, I have I describe an experiment that was done with people wired up to EEGs, which
yes.
are electroencephalograms. They measure brain waves.
Yes, I've had a few of those.
and then some psychic will send that person a message. I think in this case they were just trying to send a cup of coffee as an image, you know, as an idea. But so the person, at least the subject, will be just an average person, you know, randomly selected. It'll be sitting in this little room and just sitting there, and they'll be measuring his brainwaves. And they found that when they began sending the message, cup of coffee, his brain responded as though it was picking up something very specific, and it gave a nice repeatable response, just as strong as if they played a note or a tune or something. And yet when they asked the guy after the experiment, had he received any psychic messages, he said no. So then this is typical of an average person, that we're not conscious that we received a psychic message, and yet his brain was showing clearly that it was coming in. It was picking it up at the subconscious level. So that's why for most of us, meditation and various other practices to kind of quiet our conscious mind and learn how to pay attention to the subconscious is really important, because the information's there. All of us are psychic.
Yes,
you just have to learn how to
listen
to it.
Now, I'm wondering, is it the left brain that is just dominating, and maybe even a little bit of fear thrown in there? You know, the person says, oh, no, I didn't get anything. And maybe actually one did, but it was sabotaged by the dominance of the left brain and even the psychological. Do you follow what I'm saying here?
I do, yeah, I agree with you. Well, you'll see it. I don't know how you are at this, but I'm still not a very good meditator. But when I first started trying to meditate, you say, well, quiet the mind. You know, if any thoughts or words come through, let's let them float up and go away. Don't focus on them, you know. And once you try to let your mind be quiet, that's the first time you realize how noisy it is.
Yes.
It's just a cacophony of ideas and thoughts, and, oh, I should have done this for, you know, and I got to wash the car, and blah, 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 and just all these. And the quieter you try to be, the more you realize what a cackle is going on of words. And so it's a wonderful practice to meditate and to quiet that. And once you start doing it, then you'll begin to hear those quiet messages from the subconscious a whole lot better. But for most of us, it's just kind of a shock to see how much chatter does go on.
Oh, indeed, and there is a lot of it. Even with me, I am predominantly right-brained and always have been, and hence I'm left-handed, and I've always been creative. I do music and I do art, always have had the psychic input, and that's just been a natural part of my being. And still, I'll be very busy thinking about, oh, the next blog I'm going to write and the next radio show I'm going to do, We get really, really busy. But at the same time, it is good to, encourage people ways to just relax. In fact, again, that's what I do when I give people classes or what have you on ESP and mediumship. It's something you relax into. It's not like you have to focus and concentrate and go, ooh, but you really more let go than anything else.
Yeah. And of course, one thing that works pretty well is just simply a mantra. It's a simple saying that you repeat over and over again, and the better you get at it, the less you have to say it out loud, and the more it can just be kind of quiet or internal. But even some little simple, repetitive, hopefully positive, phrase will kind of get that talking part kind of busy and kind of put it to sleep and help to free things up, So all those things help. And I certainly agree that we're at a time where we all need to be learning, developing those faculties, because they do, I think they are naturally part of who we are, so we need to recover them. And, if there is a problem with communications, then we may have to depend on it.
Well, I think it's a given that we will need to depend on it more and more. And if I would have it required learning, as it were. And also the fact that there's a huge awakening going on. So, just by nature, that the way things are going now, we are being made to just automatically be quickened and vibrate at higher frequencies. So that means that we are going to get a lot more input from other dimensions. Because our own frequency, even on the physical plane, is rising.
Yeah, and that information is always available, but we have to tune into it.
Yes.
We have to listen to it. One of the things I was really surprised by when I was writing the book was how many, in fact, probably almost all or maybe all of the great scientific discoveries have been intuitive. Because people are given the idea that science is very logical, and you got to be very, cognitive and calculate and follow things in a plodding kind of a step-by-step logical way. And in fact, the great great inventions and the great breakthroughs come in a flash. They come intuitively. They come from that intuitive right brain psychic part of us. And so even someone like Thomas Edison, the greatest inventor of all time, over 1,000 patents, he purposely got 2 hours of sleep twice a day. He wanted to always be groggy. And the reason he wanted to be groggy was he felt that made him more receptive to psychic information. He wanted those ideas to pop into his head. I think if more people realized that having that intuitive side open, that's where the genius is.
That's a really good point you made there. That's interesting. And maybe part of it, too, with me is, having been ill so much and I just kind of slip in and out a lot, so much would come to me. And in fact, one of the things I was going to mention is that people get things through dreams as well. Oh, big time.
Well,
songs and inventions have come from dreams, you know.
Our theory of, that's what people don't realize, is our theory of the atom. I mean, one of the inventors of quantum mechanics, Niels Bohr, back in 1915 or whenever it was, they were puzzled by how the atom works, what it looks like. And he had a dream where he was standing on the surface of the sun, and he watched the planets whirling around, and he saw them all kind of tied to the sun by these strings. And he woke up from his dream, and he realized that he was seeing the atom.
Wow.
And that's where he created his theory of the atom.
And that's a very good point, too, because of the fact that, you know, people think of matter as being solid, but then when you look at the atom, it's not.
That's right.
No, there's more blank space between all these particles.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of these so-called theories are just being blown to bits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all vacuum, pretty much.
And another person that I hold in high regard, of course, is Nikola Tesla. My goodness me.
Yeah.
The amazing stuff that he's done. Now, let's, whilst we've still got a little bit of time, why don't you share with our listeners a bit about your new book?
Well, it's not out yet. I'm still writing it, so it'll be a couple or 3 months, and I've been saying that for a while, so don't hold me to it. But for me the missing piece in trying to glue our current science with the new science or the spiritual side, the missing piece is what people call subtle energy, or you might call it prana or chi. It's the energy that a Reiki healer produces that makes you warm, you know, and it's what's been called the life energy by many people.
Yeah.
And it's an energy that our current science doesn't really understand, at least in the West, and doesn't really accept either. And yet, there have been a number of researchers who have been able to collect this kind of energy and build it up. And when you do, you see that the laws of physics are really different. One of the people is Bill Tiller, Dr. William Tiller, who was a former professor of physics at Stanford, and he's now working in a lab in Arizona, and he's built little devices that when they operated, and it wasn't really intentional that they would be producing this stuff, but it was a side effect. But when they operate, they charge up his lab with subtle energy, this healing energy. And when that happens, the devices act conscious. I mean, I know that's an overstatement, and you have to kind of go back and look at what that really means. What it means is that people, you know, normally in our Western science, the paradigm is that what the physicist is thinking should not affect the experiment or the device. But when this subtle energy builds up, it does.
Oh, indeed, proper things.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a case where he calls the idea raising the gauge, which means that our physics goes to a higher level, that higher level forces become important, and that so my book is trying to pull together some of these observations and see what we can learn about the science from it. But to me, this is also the essence of healing, that Reiki masters or Qigong healers, you know, that the Chinese have developed this energy for a very long time, and it's part of the traditional Chinese medicine, okay? The yin and the yang are just two different polarities of qi energy,
okay,
which they say all living things need, and these people are very adept at creating it and transmitting it, and they use it for healing. So it's a really important and interesting subject.
Well, I'm a Reiki practitioner, and in fact, even before I specifically knew the term Reiki and had my training and then certification in Reiki, is actually two words, Rei, universal life force, and then Ki, which is also Qi, and then Qi, which is also pronounced Qi. That's energy, universal life force energy.
Uh-huh.
And I've been doing, funnily enough, I've been doing mostly remote healing. And people wonder, how do you do that? How does it happen? You know, because I even remember doing remote healing for people in America from England. And now that I'm in America, I've done Reiki. I do Reiki regularly to somebody in the Netherlands and mm-hmm. people back home in England and all over America, even some people in Australia. And so it is, again, like telepathy. It's not affected by time-space, but it works.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so simple, but it really, really does work. And the interesting thing when I'm doing Reiki, and in fact, I did a Reiki for a client in Arizona, I'll get powerful visions simultaneously whilst I'm doing the Reiki. And so then I will report back to my client the visions that I received whilst I was doing the Reiki, so that the Reiki is affecting, you know, creating physical change, healing for, you know, both physical and emotional and psychological issues or what have you. But then it turns out that what I was seeing psychically whilst doing the Reiki was also spot on, stuff that I could not have known about. So it really opens things up in a big way. And as I said, I've been doing this healing work for 40 years. And healing very serious diseases like hepatitis and cancer and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So I figure that these are some of the things that you are addressing and working on in your new book. And are you featuring laboratory tests and that sort of thing?
I am. Yeah, much as in the first book, I'm trying to pull together whatever laboratory evidence I can find. And there's quite a bit now. One of the things that as China and Asia in general, as their economies have developed and as they become much more powerful in the world economy and there's much more interaction, I'm seeing a lot of research coming out of China and of Korea of very powerful healers that work with scientists. So in their journals, their scientific journals, they're publishing more and more research on this stuff. And it's for the average Westerner, if you take one course in Reiki or something, most of us, our effects are not very dramatic. But if you find a very gifted Chinese practitioner who has been doing it for his whole life, you know, some of these guys can do amazing things. And so it's been really interesting to look at the literature. And I'm trying to pull that together.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Well, I, for one, am really looking forward to your book coming out. And then we'll have to have you back on to talk about more of that as well, because, of course, I just take it for granted that all of this stuff is real, and I don't need someone to, quote, prove it to me. But at the same time, it's nice to be able to explain to people in the intuitive as well as the scientific communities the validity of all of this stuff, because it really does work. And plants are affected by it. Again, plants, animals, it doesn't matter. Even a building is positively affected by this seemingly invisible healing modality that is totally non-invasive. And also, whilst training in Reiki, I found out that no harm can ever come to anyone receiving a Reiki treatment. But the worst that happens is that nothing happens at all.
Hmm, that's interesting. So that's a nice comforting.
Yes, it is comforting. So even if, you know, a practitioner is having an off day or a bad attitude or something, that is not going to be transmitted to the Reiki at all.
Uh-huh.
Because really we're just being a conduit to something that is really beyond us. We're just the instrument through which that energy is transmitted. And it's being used in hospitals and all of that stuff a lot more. So I'm really appreciating, Claude, that you're doing this work and helping to bridge the scientific and intuitive communities, and that we can realize that there really, you know, it isn't so much of a conflict or what have you, because I think it is a matter of having a broader perspective. And
To me, the biggest lesson from all this, and I realized this many years ago when I was just learning about it as a scientist, that this fact and that aspect, you know, and I was learning about reincarnation and about these different dimensions and things like that. And then one day I picked up Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi, and I began reading it, and I realized, oh, we're supposed to apply these lessons to our own life. We're supposed to actually change our behavior in light of our, you know, broader understanding of how things fit together. And to me, the fact that we, you know, that our physical body is not all there is, and that we do continue, and that we answer for our actions, either positive or negative, there is a balance, and it's all about growth, and that we will come back, and if we have taken care of the planet, we'll come back to a nice planet, and if we have not taken care of it, we'll come back to a devastated planet, you know, and so there's a cosmic balance. It's called karma, and it's real. It's not something that someone made up to scare people. It's just the way things work.
Yeah.
And so there's this automatic system that tells us that we need to think about how we live and the decisions that we make on the long term, the real long term view. And to me, if everyone gets that message, then a lot of the problems will right themselves over time.
Well, that's really wonderful. And I want to thank you so much, Claude, for being with us on this transmission of Toward the Light. We've been speaking with Dr. Claude Swanson, who's a wonderful, brilliant, and talented physicist who's the author of the book Synchronized Universe. And also, whilst you're at it, you might want to visit his other website, globalpeaceprayer.com, where he proves the validity of the power of prayer. Again, globalpeaceprayer.com and synchronizeduniverse.com. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is indeed only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Next week, we are going to have our special guest, Mario Beauregard, and he's also a wonderful, brilliant scientist and researcher. So please do tune in next week for another transmission of Toward the Light. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. This is Reverend Nightingale signing off for this transmission of Toward the Light. We will speak to you next week. Love and light to all of you. Bye for now.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.